great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome Dave Coltai from Pigtronics. From their original hits such as the EP1, Envelope Phaser, to modern classics like the Echolution and the Quantum Time Modulator, Pigtronics gives us guitar players futuristic analog technology that truly is fat. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great show for you tonight. Scott, how are you doing today?
I am doing good. I am pretty excited. I got done building my first. We have a pedal manufacturer on. I got done building my first pedal today. I didn't obviously design the pedal because I have no idea what I'm doing in that regards. But I followed a set of instructions, pulled out a soldering iron, and voila, I had a wah-wah pedal.
So. Well, he brought it into the studio, so I was looking at it, and it's a much cleaner soldering job than I ever could do. So it looked really nice. I mean, it was laid out pretty well, and it looked like, I have to hear what it sounds like. We didn't have an amp in today, so we're going to have to try that out.
Yeah, well, I'll be shooting. I shot the process of building it, and then I also will be shooting the plugging it in scenario, and so people can hear what it sounds like. So that'll be really cool. The other thing to mention, if you're listening live and you haven't signed up for the giveaway for the Pigtronics Quantum signed by Dave Coltai, our guest today, make sure you go to flowguitarenthusiast.com ASAP and sign up, because we are going to shut down the comments on our site and pick the winner.
How much time do we have? About a half an hour?
Probably, as long as I think last time I almost forgot to actually do the giveaway at the very end of the show. We did it, but
okay.
It's somewhere around 8:30, so make sure you get in there now to do it.
Sounds good.
FlowGuitarEnthusiast.com, sign up there. A ton of big reaction from that, so super excited about that. Jeff, what have you been up to?
Well, I just did a session for those American girls. They're friends of mine, Cartoon Rockers. I did two tunes for them. One was called New Free Woman and A Million. Go to on Facebook Alicia American. She has the links to the songs, and I'll put them up. I haven't had a chance to share them on mine, but I'll go ahead and put them up. It was fun. I got to use my modified amp that Henry built for me. It's basically like a super with a Dumble front end, and I was using my Strat and my Audio-Technica 2035. And I was getting a really nice brown sound out of it, a lot of feedback, just great gain. They like a lot of whammy bar stuff, so you can take a listen to it. It's pretty fun. So anyway, that's Alicia American. And then also they're on Twitter. I think they've had they posted that on Those American Girls, or Those USA Girls, I think is the Twitter handle. So check it out. They're cool people. They're fun to work with, and it was a blast playing guitar for them because I just got to open up that guitar and really let it scream. So it was fun.
Well, why don't we take a quick break? Before we do that, I just want to mention, make sure you stay tuned to our website and our Facebook site, because I think we will be having another giveaway being announced in the next day or two for a guest coming up in the next couple weeks. So make sure you look out for that.
Sounds like a plan. We'll be right back.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here, one of the many guitar freaks at Sweetwater for the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show. Just a heads up that Sweetwater's Mic Month is coming up in May with amazing mic specials, and we'll be giving away 31 killer mics, too. So go to sweetwater.com. It's all free. And I hope you win a wonderful mic. Call us at 800-222-4700 to get more info on how to win. This week, the Flow welcomes the magnificent Pigtronic pedal family and its founder, Dave Coltai. Especially close to my heart, as I own every pedal Pigtronic makes, Dave Coltai modified for me personally my three Keymasters that route all the Pigtronic sounds. Guitar enthusiasts all over the planet love Pigtronics, and Dave is so enthusiastic about wild guitar tones that he started his own company. Don't miss this one. Dig Pigtronics with Jeff and Scott, and don't forget to sign up in May for our mic giveaway, or call us at 800-222-4700 800 to get the scoop on all the great Mike specials. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle and Sweetwater saying rock on with the flow.
All right, everyone, you are listening to Jeff and Scott on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, and I'm Paul Reed Smith from PRS Guitars, and that's kind of what's going on. Enjoy the show.
All right, well, welcome back. I just want to introduce our guest, Dave Coltai from Pigtronix. Welcome, Dave.
Hello, everybody.
How you doing? Well, just to get started, just tell us, how did Pigtronix come about? What got you to bring and start your own pedal company?
Well, the premise of Pigtronix was that while it may be true, indeed, we live in a digital world, there is a possibility that the future could be analog. And some people felt that to insist that future is being analog, given all the state of everything these days, is about as ridiculous as saying that pigs would fly. And I'm here to tell you that pigs are not just going to fly. They're going to go right to outer space.
And they wear fantastic goggles while doing it.
And they're wearing World War I flight goggles.
Exactly.
And the origination of the concept of Pigtronix goes back all the way to a whimsical joke and a beautiful convalescence of personalities. Back in college, I went to Middlebury College and had a very good friend whom, for unknown reasons, was nicknamed by the Frisbee team Pigpen. And Pigpen was a physics major and a very advanced physics student. I worked for the University of Chicago during the summers, getting paid to do advanced research there. And for his, we all played in bands, me and Pigpen and a bunch of other friends. And for his senior physics project, his advisor advised him that he should make a guitar pedal out of this book by Craig Anderton. It's a very famous book from the 70s called Electronic Projects for Musicians. That book is really the reason that Craig Anderton is the godfather of DIY and the seminal figure for so many of us who got into building our own pedals and you know, tweaking circuits and combining things in strange ways. And so Pigpen read the book and decided that he was going to create an envelope-controlled phase shifter, basically combining two of the most advanced projects in there, both of which utilized opto-isolators, which are a device that, not to get too technical too fast, but basically uses light to modulate a resistance and therefore, without any transfer of noise, of audio noise, can transmit signals such as LFOs and or envelope types of DC signals into passive resistance that changes and can manipulate an analog circuit. And he actually made his own opto-isolators, and we'll get into more about that later when we talk about some of the Pigtronix products that emerged years and years later. But Pigpen wound his own opto-isolators and made an absolutely stunning envelope-controlled phase shifter to cop the sound of Jerry Garcia 1977 estimated profit Mutron 3 from hell.
Now, is that same circuit, or is that very similar to kind of like the old Univibe? Is that same technology?
No. Yes, but no. I mean, yes, it is the same idea. I mean, the Univibe was really the original phase shifter, and it also did use a light bulb. It did not use a quote-unquote opto-isolator, as that's a device that came along a little later, but essentially it was, because it took a light bulb and enclosed it in a light-tight aluminum box, and there was a photoresistive element there that changed the phase. There was multiple photoresistive elements that changed the phase of the audio, and that's how Univibe works. And yes, this is a similar concept. And so, yes, I would say you are correct. It is a 70s solid state evolution 4-stage phase shifter was the Craig Anderton design. And there was the ability to make this using the NSL32, which is a fairly common opto-isolator that was still made. So Pigpen made his envelope phase shifter, which took an envelope control as well as an LFO and let you switch actually between the Jerry Garcia Mutron sound and that oscillating Jimi Hendrix sound that you have from Band of Gypsies, the first couple tracks. I mean, the Univibe is just legendary on that. And so I always kind of thought of this effect as something that really was like the Mutron and the Univibe meeting in a dark alley and having a baby. I was just super enthralled by this project, and Pigpen asked me to demonstrate the effect for the physics department. So I went ahead and did that, and I just was blown away by the thing, and asked him to please, you know, show me, you know, teach me all about this. And so we made an optical compressor from the same book, using opto-isolators, and we made another envelope phaser, but this one was in a rack and had relay-based switching, so you could get between the Univibe and the envelope, you know, by themselves. And at the time, I was a music major, an aspiring professional musician. I was gigging, and I lost some band members to this rack unit. I mean, this thing had an envelope, was so hot it would open, would whop, 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 and then, you know, you'd open it up far enough and it would self-oscillate, you know, and we'd be doing a ballad, you know, we'd be doing like or Footprints or something, and you're trying to envelope like Steve Kimmock, and just, you know, you have to turn your whole rig off because the whole thing's going crazy. Nice. So anyway, these were the early days, and we had one other friend, Brian Bethke, who was another guitar player in yet another band, and Brian was a Chinese major. An economics major. So Pigpen studied physics. I was English and music, and Brian was Chinese and economics. And somewhere in there, we came up with the joke, you know, we should start the company Pigtronics. And, you know, Pigpen would invent the stuff, and Brian would get it made in China, and I'd sell it. And so this was back in 2001, and we all graduated and went our separate ways. Pigpen went on to Cornell to do a PhD in neuroscience and has pursued computer algorithms about the way the brain perceives art, and he works in the field of image authentication for fine art. Wow. To write algorithms to detect, you know, is it the real thing or not? Anyway, that's what happened to Pigpen, and his involvement basically stops at the namesake and the original prototype, which we still have here, and it still works and it sounds phenomenal.
And thank goodness you don't make your pedals in China. You make them right here in the U.S.
Yes. Well, there was a time when I heard in the original EP1 was mentioned in the trailer there was a time that Pigtronix pedals were made in China. And that's part of our story, is a reshoring story. And we've actually been covered in Business Week about this. We actually found it was far more effective and profitable to have our own factory in New York than to manufacture the stuff in China. And the story of figuring that out and the growth that's ensued is certainly an interesting one from a business perspective, and is intrinsically tied with this discovery of tone and in investigating every aspect of what makes up guitar effect, the lexicon of not just guitar effects, but effects processing in general, both analog and digital, what's possible, and then pushing the boundaries in various niches that I felt were open that could be developed. There was still room for analog to progress. I mean, there were some incredible companies like Electro-Harmonix and absolutely Roland and Ibanez, you know, did some incredible stuff all throughout the 70s, you know, and even with Korg back in the 60s in Univox and the Univibe. But, you know, incredible a proliferation of analog wizardry and synth technology with Moog throughout the 70s, and then digital processing becomes commercially viable and affordable enough in about 1982, 1983. The DX7 hits, and like everything goes digital, and some of these companies went out of business, like Electro-Harmonix, with their problems with the Bucket Brigade chips and the unavailability and the way that the product that was their bread and butter depended on those chips.
Right.
And Panasonic sold them all to Ibanez, so they couldn't, you know, poof. Other companies like Roland, who just really stopped developing cutting-edge analog stuff for the most part and went fully digital. And so when I came at this crossroads where I'd been building pedals, I went to work for a record label. We're in like 2001, and the record industry was just collapsing. And Brian was exploring China, and he said, "Look, we joked about Pigtronics. Let's do this for real." And I was blessed with the opportunity to be able to put together the financing to live the dream and make this vision of futuristic analog technology come true. And at that time, I had modded the hell out of that original Craig Anderton prototype and gotten in touch with Craig Anderton and sought his blessing to do this. And I basically had read this article somewhere deep on the internet about asymmetrical phase shifting and how the Univibe was so out there that the inconsistency between the various phasing sections actually caused asymmetry. So deep into the night, trying different types of asymmetrical capacitor values with different types of mathematical ratios between the various stages, I come up with what I really sounds like the Univibe of doom to me. And then you could crank the resonance and get this incredible vocal speaking envelope thing going on. And so, this is like 10 years ago. We made Envelope Phaser. We made it in China. That was a very painful process, but we had a hit. We introduced it at Summer NAMM in that very one show. Victor Wooten, Bakiti Kumalo was hanging out in the booth. I met John Schofield, Eric Krasno, who ultimately has been one of the most pivotal endorsees and influential musicians on me in my whole career. And it was just a hit. It was great. And after that point, it was pretty clear that Craig Anderton wasn't going to be able to be part of our company or take us forward from an engineering standpoint. And I reached out to Analog Man, Analog Mike, who, of course, had made wonderful Tube Screamer modifications for Trey Anastasio from Fish and made the Ross clone compressors that everybody was so hot on. And it was guys like him and Fulltone that had really pioneered really boutique professional grade effects stuff by making super high grade recreations of the classic great tones. And I asked him, I said, "Look, man, I need a guru. I need to find the person who's going to be able to make this vision come true, because I certainly don't have the experience or knowledge of engineering how to make this happen."
Right.
Dave, speaking of components and analog, how do you keep the quality of the components? Do you have problems getting, like the Bucket Brigade stuff, the circuits that you need that are for analog? Because other manufacturers that we've talked to on the show, that's always been a problem to keep the quality consistent. Do you have that same problem?
No. And you've come to the crossroads you've asked the perfect question at the perfect time, because Analog Mike introduced me to Howard Davis. Intelligent design, as he might say. Howard Davis is an older guy. He lives in Brooklyn, right where Ocean Parkway meets the Prospect Expressway. And he's been living there for ages. I don't think his apartment's changed a bit since 1973. This is the man who designed the Deluxe Memory Man for Electro-Harmonix. It was the first pedal he ever designed, coming right out of school and out of filter design class, where he studied with Volpe. But he designed the Deluxe Memory Man for Electro-Harmonix. It was a huge hit. He went on to become their chief of engineering for Electro-Harmonix from 1975 to 1983 when they closed down. And Howard Davis has designed the analog circuitry behind every Pigtronix product that has ensued from that meeting, starting with the distortion pedal in 2005. Mm-hmm. The distortion was the follow-up to the Envelope Phaser. We needed to not make a stinky second pedal. And the distortion remains in production today, has sold increasing numbers every single year, and is in use by luminaries consistently on tour year on year. Tony Levin, Adrian Ballou, Doug Wimbish, all Aerosmith tracked almost every tune on their last record has the distortion on it, and it is still in Brad Whitford's rig. That pedal featured fuzz and overdrive in parallel and had different filters, all analog passive filtering, not active EQs, all passive filtering, but different types of passive filtering that you could mix in parallel between the fuzz and overdrive circuits. And the overdrive was Howard's totally original CMOS-based overdrive. And the roots of that circuit go back to also Craig Anderton's Tube Sound Overdrive from that same book, and then was developed further by George Tripps with the Red Llama pedal, and then finally used every stage of the chip, ate every piece of the animal, and made the Pigtronics overdrive circuit. That's the blue overdrive and the distortion pedal, which then later became the Fat Drive as a single standalone unit.
So when Howard Davis worked on that, I mean, are you basically saying that, you know, since it was an original design, he obviously decided to use parts that are widely available and consistent?
Yes, and that's the entire precedent, was you design something that has absolutely world-class tone and can cop all of the classic sounds, but then goes one step further and can also be delivered at an extremely competitive price point with you know, profitability built in so that you could sustain your company and develop more cool stuff and keep going. And that Fat Overdrive, man, is something else. It's still absolutely at the core of my personal tone. When I pitch it at guitar shows or show people, you know, I always talk about how pedal makers will show you how their pedal cleans up when you turn the volume down. Well, that's great. Like, everything does that. This pedal has an exaggerated response to touch. So, I mean, it really can go from completely clean to stupidly overdriven just based on the dynamics of your playing. And I found that with this design and almost everything else we make, you, if to get that kind of super wide dynamic range, you need an 18 volt power supply, because a guitar, a humbucker, can put out transients of 4 volts, 5 volts all day long. And if you're rocking a 9 volt power supply, and then that might either be regulated or filtered or weighed down, you're really only got 7 volts now, and then your AC, so it's really only 3.5 volts, and then you're not using rail-to-rail op amps, and all of a sudden, your pedal can't even take the transients that your guitar is producing, and it's flattening everything and squashing things. And I was always seeking something new. The whole point of Pigtronics was not to just make garbledygook sounds. You know, I absolutely love ZVEX for how far he pushes things out, and was way out ahead of Pigtronics. I mean, I was in high school when he was, you know, kicking ass and developing amazing pedals. But ultimately, Pigtronics has got a bit of a jazz influence, you know, from myself and fusion music. And my conception of a good pedal is one that doesn't get in the way between you and your music. That everything from the thickness of your pick, the string itself, the type of magnets in your humbuckers, the wood of the guitar, the connection of the neck to the wood, and all that stuff, you know, through down all the way through the circuitry of the amp, and then what speaker you've chosen to use, and then what mic. I mean, that's a really hard connection to maintain end to end. And a bad pedal breaks that. A good pedal at least maintains it, and a great pedal can actually enhance it. Or bring some additional nuance or color that is relatively scaled to the dynamic range available to the musician on the instrument. So I think that the distortion really fulfills that. We also had this cool Octava. I always loved the Dan Armstrong Green Ringer, and I'd built many of the classic effects just by hand, burn my own circuit boards and whatever. So the Green Ringer was cool. We redesigned it from scratch so it would be more stable with chords. And I put it on the front end of the distortion. So an Octavia is a fuzz followed by a transformer diode coupled octave multiplier. And so it's distortion followed by octaving. With the distortion pedal, our pedal, I said we did it backwards, which is more reminiscent of what Frank Zappa did. Where he built the Green Ringer into his guitar. So that's the first thing it has, a frequency doubler, and then you go into your gain. And the frequency doubler has some noise-canceling properties to it. So when you turn everything on the distortion, you have just intense amounts of gain, but the fuzz and overdriver in parallel, and you got a frequency doubler up front, adding an octave and canceling noise, and you get this sound that'll just level you flat, but has, like, no noise at all. And it's a fun pedal. And that one, it was a big piece of me and Howard learning how to work together. And I discovered he's kind of a combination of Rain Man and Yoda.
do most of your pedals come at 18 volts then? Is that what you're saying?
Every Pigtronics pedal ships with an 18-volt, 300-milliamp power supply with it. So that's enough power to daisy chain about 50% of the pedals we make all in a row. And they all have massive filtering on them. So you can daisy chain things without that weird interactive coupling you get from some other manufacturers' pedals when you daisy chain them. So yeah, every pedal ships with a power supply, because I've probably sacrificed enormous amount of pedal sales over this power supply issue. most of our pedals don't draw very much current, but those 18-volt rails just give you so much freedom to get an enormously loud guitar sound that has big dynamic range with a very low noise floor. Your power supply headroom is directly related to your noise floor and the amount of punch you can get out of things. The envelope phaser, the original Craig Anderton thing, was a bipolar power supply. So we shipped that with like a 12-volt AC weirdo adapter. That was a terrible idea. Then we moved to 15 volts for the distortion, the attack sustain, and the echolution, and the polysaturator. And then stepped it up to 18 volts for the rest of everything since then. And the distortion can run on 18, and the poly can run on 18, and the attack sustain can marginally run an 18. Don't blow it up. If you got an attack sustain, just call me and get a 15 volt. but yeah, I've probably sacrificed a lot of sales just out of my insistence on using that kind of power supply. The other option is to, you know, use a 9-volt, put charge pump chips in there and drive the cost of the pedal up, and then the charge pumps create noise. And I just have opted to just have my own proprietary power supply that's actually nice and quiet, and we sell, and that comes with every pedal for free, basically. So, yes.
So what are your opinion on using buffering, either in the pedal or actually having a buffering pedal? Do you recommend using that? I have
extremely strong opinions about that.
Well, I would love to hear your strong opinions.
the last thing I will say about power supply, as it is very important, is that a lot of the pedals, a lot of the pedals can run on 9 volts, and it has that option, and it's printed on the chassis, and it actually will change the nature of the clipping when things distort earlier, and that can be a good thing. A lot of modulation pedals, you really need that headroom to get clean modulation of clean sounds, and that is also part of what forced me onto that 18-volt standard. Moving on to buffering. If you have a pedal with one input and two outputs, it better be buffered. If you have a lot of pedals in a row, it's highly advisable that you have buffers strategically placed within the chain. There are some very severe consequences of placing buffers in the wrong place when it comes to using vintage effects and the way that pickups rely on loading. There's also cool, weird things you can take advantage of with impedances. The Keymaster we make is a 10K input impedance. We find that when you put a wah in front of that 10K impedance, it's like really just sounds really good. It's real sweet. It has a very sweet type of thing because of the natural low pass that happens with that particular setup. For the most part, any rig that I'm putting together is usually going to have mostly all the single foot switch pedals will be true bypass. And then anything with a stereo capability or like the distortion, which has a clean output that's always available, then you're going to go to that buffered switching situation. When you use analog chips like CMOS switches to move your switches around, people sometimes call that true bypass, but it's not, because those switches have a finite resistance on the chips themselves. So you really have to use relays, and then, you know, there's this whole issue of silent switching, and when you use buffers, you've got a lot more control of the DC buildup, and it eliminates your issues with the switching. But you got to be careful, you know, when you build your rig, every piece has to fit in order to not get tone sucking. And I get the sense you guys just talk about tone all day long, and I'm not sure that I'm gonna completely address, you know, the beauty is beauty in terms of tone is in the eye of the listener, or in the ear of the listener, I suppose, what I should have said. Maybe we can talk about that a little later, once we know each other better.
Would you recommend the Class A Boost as a buffer?
I recommend the Class A Boost, period. I think that's our most underrated pedal. That pedal is special because it doesn't use op amps. It uses JFETs, and it's unique in its ability to handle extremely large signal levels without itself distorting. So it can add like almost 20 dB of boost to a line level signal without hitting the rails. I mean, it's an enormous amount of clean energy you can add to a signal if you want to be boosting. And even if you're just kind of buffering and, you know, maybe you're adding a half a dB of gain or just a little makeup gain is basically what a buffer tends to be, because you're making up for the capacitance and the low pass filtering that happens in your cables and even on the PCB traces that might be incorporated into the true bypass circuitry on any pedals you are using. The Classic Boost is like my favorite thing in terms of just raw tone. Richard Fortus from Guns N' Roses has been using that thing for a long, long time. I've had a lot of customers, you know, call this the secret weapon. Krasno, I basically developed it for Eric Krasno, who's really known for his super, super clean, very, very articulate tone. Dude doesn't always use a lot of sustain. You know, he's really quick and nimble and has a beautiful round, almost Grant Green kind of sound. And I had made some prototypes for him over the years. I was very much inspired by the Jack Orman boost, which many people will say that Full Tone ripped off for his fat boost. And I don't call it ripping off. I call it taking a good circuit, doing your own thing with it and making some money. You know, but I wasn't real satisfied with that circuit in terms of its overall headroom or ability to stay linear no matter how much gain you put on it. And I think the graphics on the Class A boost and the name of the Class A boost maybe aren't like the clearest, but that's one hell of a preamp, and I rely on it on every gig.
Since it's about halfway through the show, a little more past halfway the show, I'm going to close the comments on the giveaway. And while I'm coming up and having the computer pick the winner, why don't you tell us about the Quantum and actually what that does and kind of how it even came about? Because I saw there's an interesting story about why that pedal came about.
Oh, man. The Quantum Time Modulator was definitely one of the most fun pedals to develop. Dweezil Zappa invited me to come up and hang at his Full Moon Resort, Dweezilla Camp, up in Woodstock. And that was absolutely a blast. And getting to see him do the masterclass, which totally blew my mind. He had been using a Philosopher's Stone, numerous of them, actually. Originally, when he set them up, he got five of them. And we use you incorporating them within the Axe effects. Because if there's one thing you can't do digitally is sustain. And the Philosopher's Stone is absolutely my most famous pedal and uses these custom opto-isolators that we developed to be able to achieve that kind of noiseless sustain stuff. So Dweezil and I had been tight. You love that pedal, made some awesome demo videos for us with that, and a Fat Drive as well, which I highly recommend you check out. And I go up to see him play with his band and do the masterclass and stuff, and I did a little presentation on effects at the camp there. And he's got this piece in his rack that I've never seen. And I've studied gear, you know, as long as I've been playing guitar, and which is pretty much since puberty. And I was like, what is this thing? And Thomas Nordegg, who was there teching for Dweezil, who had originally been a tech for Frank Zappa, apparently drove Dweezil to day school and everything back in the day, and also tech for Steve Vai and whatnot. He saw, this is the Dynaflanger. This is the sound. Shut up and play your guitar. And so Dweezil, you know, turned it on and blew my face off with it. And he was playing quadraphonic at that point with two fractals and four of those atomic self-powered monitor situations. And he had two Dynaflanger type of things going on. And he would use just one of two, you know, in a stereo setup, so he just Dynaflange just the left, you know, and leave the right clean or distorted, but, you know, not Dynaflanged. And it would give this jumping effect where basically your delay time is changing in the negative inversion of envelope. So it's the delay time is actually getting shorter as you play a note, and you got a, you know, certain amount of resonance and exactly frequency matching to the range of the Bucket Brigades. And it's a hell of a sound. And so I never heard that before. And lucky me, living in New York, Craigslist, man, I'll tell you, you can find some stuff. And I found a Dynaflanger on Craigslist. I convinced a guy to trade me some Pigtronics pedals for it. I got it. I got Dweezil on the phone. He helps me dial in the secret shut up and play your guitar sound in my rack of doom. And we're playing it, and it's very inspiring. And then we got to meet with Rush. And he's using a TC-1210, and I found one of those, too, and tried that. And I also got really into the Dimension C pedal, that Boss Roland pink little thing with the four silver square buttons. That's a double chorus. So you got your Dynaflanger, which is called a Dynaflanger, but Frank Zappa used it in the delay mode, which is really a chorus. For those who are not totally in the know, when it comes to time modulation effects, very, very short delays that are modulated is flanging, slightly longer delays that are modulated is chorus, and then you get into your slapback and reverb, and I digress. But anyway, the Dynaflanger effect for Frank Zappa's record is a chorus, and he's not using the feedback. And I love the sound of that double chorus from the Rush stuff with the TC Spatial Expander and Dave Gilmour and Mark Knopfler, blah, blah, blah. And so we made a pedal that in one single little box with a single foot switch gave you access to all of those tones, plus a vibrato so that Juan Alderete wouldn't hate me. So you have three knobs. The knob on the left controls the amount of envelope that is voltage that's created by your picking. The knob on the right controls the speed of the onboard LFO. So very much like the original envelope phaser concept, you have two modulation sources, an envelope and an LFO. And then there's the source knob, which blends between those two modulation sources. So you can mix the two, or you can just throw the source knob all the way over to one side and get just pure envelope modulation or pure LFO modulation, which would be called standard chorus, except that there's two of them happening at the same time, and I clocked them differently than we did on the than is done on the Dimension C. They're actually clocked in synchronization rather than opposition, and it creates this wonderful spatial field. And if you plug into the output with an insert cable, you get pure stereo. Dweezil, it turns out, likes the effect of the quantum mixture of both sources in stereo so much that he thinks it's kind of its own thing, that he's using that way, and he's using something else for the Dynaflanger. he's a maniac. That guy is a maniac on guitar and always seeking new sounds and trying out new things, and is just absolutely an inspiration to me in terms of tone, and not feeling guilty about having complex rigs, because that guy puts together some crazy stuff.
David, the quantum time modulator, will that go, is that act as a flanger too besides a chorus?
It does. It does absolutely get some flanging sounds. However, traditionally a flanger would have variable feedback, and I have not given that to you in the quantum. Trust me, you don't want it.
Okay.
The effect of flanging is absolutely mysterious, and I would maintain that to my ears, some of the older rack mount delays that could do flanging, like the Ibanez AD-202, which for you delay hounds out there, just go on eBay and get one because the values have fallen tremendously. Big green two-space thing is tremendous. I have two of them. I would never sell them. They're amazing. The Ibanez AD-202 delays and the MXR-126 flangers use these older bucket brigade chips, which were the 15-volt process bucket brigades that you could really ram a lot of audio through. And they had wider clock ranges, especially the old MXR-126 that Dimebag Darrell used and Eric, all of Avaya Musicom, Eric Johnson. That flanger is the MXR-126. You could go ask James Santiago, who remastered it right there in L.A. That's the piece. That's the best sounding flanger I ever heard, and it uses SAD 1024 bucket brigade chips. Well, you just, unless you can call Howard Davis, he has a few, but you know, they have this enormous wide clock range, like hugely wide clock range, 500 to 1, you know, depending how you set it up, versus the very, very minimal clock range of the modern bucket brigade chips we can get now. So I'm just not digging on the sound of using those modern bucket brigade chips, which don't have the same big headroom or the big clock range to create that classic flanger sound. I still haven't found it.
Will your pedal get similar to like the instant flanger, the Eventide, which was a classic?
Yeah, Yeah, I like that.
I think that's a bucket. That was a Bucket Brigade one. That wasn't digital. The original Rack
that was
one.
That was a beautiful piece. That's used on Kashmir by Led Zeppelin. And envelope-controlled flanging, envelope-controlled phasing. I mean, Eventide was definitely a pioneer of doing that. Those pieces, the instant flanger and the instant phaser, are absolutely precursors to many of the Pigtronix pedals and inspirations too. I mean, we've done a tremolo that changes based on how hard you play, both the speed and the depth, independently adjustable. You know, independent can be made to go more or less from where the knobs are positioned based on how hard you play. I love that envelope control kind of stuff. It's absolutely one of those elements where it can enhance what the effect can do with your music. Even the Philosopher King, which takes all that sustain and compression and then incorporates a pick-triggered ADSR, where you can use the sensitivity to determine when the machine is going to mute and then let you swell your volume in again. You know, it takes into this very complex envelope processing going on to make that happen. Or like the Mothership, where it's a pitch tracking synth, you know, and it needs to hold on to both the note and the amplitude envelope you're picking. That envelope stuff's a lot of fun, and each application requires a different engineering solution. And working on those, as a musician who speaks the language of engineering and communicate with these brilliant engineers to realize a musical result is absolutely the core of what I do. It's fun.
Well, I don't know. Did you get the text message I sent you? I sent you the winner of the...
Oh, all right. I did get that.
So I don't know if you want to announce who the winner is of the Quantum.
All right. I will say now this is sponsored by Sweetwater, right?
Well,
I'm the pedal's on me, but I just want to say Sweetwater has been number one Pigtronix dealer for many years in a row, and those guys know so much about Pigtronix, and you know, I appreciate them sponsoring the show. That was very cool. Thanks, Kenny Burgle, for the shout out.
Yeah, he was super excited when we told him that we were going to have you on.
Well, I absolutely appreciate the opportunity, and if you guys are interested in taking me up on it, I'd be happy to do explorations of the concepts of tone with you guys anytime.
Great.
Now, Mr. Tim Enright, you got yourself a Quantum Time Modulator, all right? That pedal took me years to develop, a lot of research, and Andy Summers got his. He put it up against the Mobius, and it made his board. And he emailed me. He said, "You stole my sound." I said, "I know, man."
That's great.
Yeah. So congratulations, Tim Enright.
So don't hate me for it.
Well, I'll be sending you an email, get in contact with you, and then I'll have Dave send you out the pedal. So that'll be cool.
Tim, if you don't like it, call me and tell me why. No, I'm kidding. You're going to love it, man. It's a lot of fun. And the Quantum Time Modulator, maybe you want to call up Sweetwater and get an insert cable, too, so you can use it in stereo. That thing is badass.
Now, you, I don't know if you happened to see, but there was quite a few fun comments people were putting about that pedal. They were just having fun with it, so on our website. So it was quite
fun. I'll take a look at that and log in with some snarky comments of my own. I think it's really important for all of us tone hounds. You're out there, you're searching your tone. Don't think you know everything. Man, I've been searching for tone for years and years, like 20 years, you know, and I never pretend like I know everything. I've been spent the last year and a half of my life researching Supro. And I happen to have just purchased the worldwide rights to Supro amplifiers and guitars. And I'm bringing back the legendary brand Supro. And I have been absolutely humbled by the depth of mystery and weirdness that goes into vintage Class A tube amp design. And speaker design and all this stuff. And there's so much out there. And, you know, all those things that are points of reference and all those guys that spent their lives trying to bring you great tone, you know, there's like a legacy going on of all these people that put their heart into the industry. And, you know, nobody should be written off. Everybody should be given a chance for having made their effort and did their best to try to do something with it. And I hope that all you guys will go on my website, pigtronix.com, and check out all those SoundCloud sound samples. That's pure audio for all you talk radio listeners. There's all sorts of stuff up there that depicts our best efforts to show you what this stuff does. And if you have questions or want to know something, you can call Pigtronix or email Pigtronix, and we're happy to talk tone with you and help you figure out how to get where you want to go, whether it's with the gear you already have or maybe something we haven't even invented yet. We're always open to hear what people want to say.
So let me ask you this question. This is kind of this is something actually that I actually run into on my personal setup, and I'm wondering if you have a way around it, or maybe one of your pedals, like maybe your Gatekeeper, is maybe what I need to get. But so I have a phase pedal on my on mine. I don't know if you would like me to say it, but it's by another company, but it's a classic phase.
I love all good phase shifters.
The problem I have with it, though, is when I, you know, have the effect on and I'm not playing something, I hear a clicking sound, like click, 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 click. Is this something you've ever run into? Is there a way to get around that?
You really want the honest answer?
Get a different pedal, I'm guessing.
Oh man, no. When I got the first set of production envelope phasers from China, man, and I turn them on and they go click, 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 click. I almost shat myself. I was absolutely shocked. No, I mean LFOs create transients, and they need to be decoupled, and that's done with really good circuit board design. But there's things you can kludge in there. You can physically decouple the chip, or potentially shield the wires that are in there that are causing that problem. Modify the circuit board if you're so bold. But that's a physical construction issue. Opto-isolators prevent the click from actually leaking through the audio path in that way, but the click is so strong it can capacitively couple in a lot of different places, and I've obsessively tried to chase that stuff out of pedals. The quantum time modulator was probably the hardest one because you have two Bucket Brigade clocks. At two of them. I mean, one of them is crazy enough because they operate very close to the very top of human hearing range, which is, you know, they can swing down at a 20K or 18K. Now you got two of them which can intermodulate against each other and create some indifference frequencies all over the audio spectrum. And that stuff, I mean, it took us like 9 months of circuit board development and changes and modifications on high stakes, expensive prototypes, and absolutely tiny little double-sided circuit board stuff, looks like a cell phone. Yet with still analog Bucket Brigade chips that are mounted through hole Bucket Brigade chips, the best ones you can get, thank you Visual Sound, mounted inside the Quantum. I mean, it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. How are you going to fix it? Get a different pedal that doesn't do that. It's the easiest way. You don't have to get my pedal. I strongly recommend the Envelope Phaser by Pigtronix, but it's big. You know, maybe you want something smaller. Maybe you want to wait to the EP3, which takes the quantum layout of the sensitivity and the source and the speed, and then you just have a little toggle switch in the middle for something special.
When will that EP3 be out?
I'm just hinting. I don't know. I mean, it's there's a lot of other stuff we got to do. I mean, we showed at NAMM the Rototron, which is a Leslie simulator, a dual rotor Leslie simulator. The thing's got a quadrature LFO in it. That's an LFO with three different waveforms that all stay symmetrical over the range of the entire LFO speed range. Plus, then it's got another additional LFO for the low rotor. So you had a total of four LFOs that can't make any clicking. I mean, I know all about that click that you're hearing, my brother, and I don't want any part of it.
I just want to mention I have an original Maestro phase shifter. I think that Oberheim had designed the original one.
Yeah, Gibson.
And,
yeah,
and it ran fine for years, but eventually it started doing that clicking sound. So I'm wondering if
that's filtering. That's power supply capacitor filtering. That's easy. Any really good design, you know, is going to decouple the LFO itself with capacitance as well as the power supply. And the LFO, because it's drawing – the op amps draw their voltage directly from the power supply. If it's not decoupled right, or, you know, cap goes bad, it can actually leak those transients backwards into the power supply rails or even onto ground. So, you know, recapping a vintage pedal – if it's something that's old, recapping a vintage pedal would take care of that. If anything that like develops over time that's of that sort of noise nature, immediately I look towards capacitors going bad or certain types of CMOS chips, which have complex internal capacitance structures, or OTAs, like a 3080 and a Ross compressor can get noisy over time. Not the nice can ones, but the crappy ones, you know, can do that. Anyway, there's, I mean, it's a whole deep science of this stuff, but you know, some pedals just click, man. Some just do. And sometimes it's worth it.
Yeah.
So when did you actually move your shop into the U.S.? When did you officially go to the U.S.?
What happened with us is that the envelope phasers were made in China. Then the first run of distortions, the ones with silver jacks, were made in China. If you find one of those, super-duper cheap, I'll refurb it for you, super cheap, and you can have them. But, man, you don't want to get one of those. We got silver jacks, needs a new circuit board. That was a disaster, man. I wasn't into it. And so we moved production to my apartment. And it was intense. And luckily, I stayed married. We moved to a bigger apartment. It kept getting more intense. And then came the Philosopher's Tone. My wife has actually named many of the Pigtronics pedals. She's a sharp lady, and she's got a great wit. And, you know, distortion, echolution. You know, and one day she came up with Philosopher's Tone. And I said, man, I don't know what circuit that would be, but that would have to be one hell of a circuit. You know, that'd have to be something really special. Shortly afterwards, we were working on the development of the Attack Sustain pedal, which was the precursor to a pedal I mentioned earlier, the Philosopher King, which is a polyphonic amplitude generator, an ADSR, like a synthesizer, a thing that lets you have a slow attack with your volume. It sounds sort of like a violin, you know, the volume swell, and then as well as a predictable decay. And if you turn the volume swell and decay functions off, you just get pure compression, so infinite sustain. And that circuit was cool. And Frank Marino, a famous Canadian guitar player, Mahogany Rush, amazing guitar player, got an Attack Sustain and called me up and said, you know, this is clever. I bought it because of the volume swell thing, but you know, you've really got an amazing compressor on your hand here. You should turn that into a pedal, but you know, add some more controls to it, you know. Mm-hmm. And he liked the distortion we added to the Attack Sustain, which you can mix in, which by the way is a sibling or younger brother or son or whatever of the original Electro Harmonix Attack Decay, which was a monophonic version of the same type of concept where you could get a predictable volume swell, a synthesizer, ADSR shape, envelope shape. So anyway, we made a polyphonic one with optically coupled. Again, we use opto-isolators to create the optically coupled volume control. And so we made a Philosopher's Tone, and it was a huge hit. And it got the editor's pick from Guitar Player magazine. Andy Summers picked it up and used it on the tour with the Police on Walking on the Moon. Talk about a moment. Oh, and we sold a lot of them. And it was like, okay, we need a factory. And so we got our factory in Port Jefferson, Long Island, right by the ferry to Connecticut on the water out east. We're about a mile from the ocean, and we make pedals all day long. And we actually just moved now to our second factory, which we just built so that we can – in parallel with the entire Pigtronics line of pedals, we can build a line of 1964 reissue Supro amplifiers.
Wow. Well, we definitely have to have you on to talk about the Supros when you get those going.
Well, it's going. We actually had the New York Guitar Show is this weekend. We had our pre-launch party. There's a little bit of footage of Eric Krasno on YouTube from the Brooklyn Bowl playing his Thunderbolt. New reissue Thunderbolt, which we built. He's got one of the very first. If you search YouTube for Supro Krasno, I think you'll find what you're looking for in terms of the rebirth of Supro. That tone is the real thing.
Well, Dave, thank you so much. We're actually running out of time, but if you make sure everyone go to Pigtronics.com, and we thank you so much for being our guest.
Yeah, we definitely have to have you on and back again.
Let me give you my tagline, okay?
Okay.
You gotta play Pigtronics. Get fat. Futuristic audio technology. I had to change it to audio technology because of the Echolution 2. So make sure you check that out too, because they spent 4 years developing Echolution 2, and it's the best thing we ever made. Go Pigtronics into the 21st century of analog tone.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Good night, everybody.
Hang out, and we'll talk to you after the show.
Thank you.